Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Release Half Year Results 2018 conference call and live webcast. I'm Sherry, the Chorus Call operator. The conference must not be recorded for publication or broadcast. At this time, it's my pleasure to hand over to Mr. Stan March. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, Sherry. Good morning and welcome to Landis & Gear's first half fiscal year 2018 results conference call. I'm Stan March, responsible for communications and investor relations at Landis & Gear. And I'm joined by Richard Mora, Landis & Gear's CEO, and Jonathan Elmer, our CFO. Earlier today, we issued a press release with the group's results, as well as Landis & Gear's first half report, the earnings presentation, as well as our latest sustainability report. You can find all these documents on the website under the Investors tab. Now, for today's call, we'll be driving the slides via a webcast, which you can access through the link on the website. If you don't have access, we'll identify the slides by number as we move through. Finally, if you have any questions, you can find my or Christian Velti's relevant contact information in the documents I just mentioned. And with that introduction, I'll now turn the microphone over to Richard.
Very good, Stan, and thank you for that. And good morning, everyone, and welcome to our first half fiscal year 2018 results announcement. As you may know, it's been a busy first half. Many challenges. We stay focused, kept our heads down, worked hard, and executed the plan. We delivered a solid set of numbers. Not perfect, more work to be done, but solid. Before digging into the details, I'd like to make a few comments about the operational performance in the first half. First, our Americas business performed well. Backed by impressive demand in North America, the region effectively managed the expected reduction in Japan and hit a 20.5% adjusted EBITDA margin. Outside of Japan, revenues in the region grew by about 14% in constant currency terms. This resilience is one of our core strengths, and I really wanted to highlight it up front. Turning to EMEA, we've spoken at length about the recovery plan and what we need to do. The EMEA team worked incredibly hard on this, and their efforts are now paying off. Despite supply chain constraints and net revenue pressures, we've delivered significant improvement in the adjusted gross profit margin. That shows we're making real progress. The region was break-even in the first half, and we expect to continue improving profitability in the second half. EMEA was affected by supply chain issues. Couple this with temporary slowdown in the UK as the market transitions from SMETS 1 to SMETS 2, and the Spain project rolling off. These three factors contributed to lower revenue in the region. I mentioned the problem of supply chain constraints on our last call back in June. Those problems have continued during the first half. They impacted both the top and bottom line, and we know the issues are temporary, but it seems certain will remain a challenge for the rest of fiscal year 18. All right, let's move on to the details of the first half. We can queue up slide 3. You can see some of the key numbers, and there's clearly been some positive outcomes. Looking at our sales funnel, order intake increased 10.8% year over year. This was largely driven by EMEA and reaching $910 million, giving us a book-to-bill ratio of 1.07. On the top line, we had net revenues of $852 million, a year-on-year decrease of 1.5%, minus 1.9% in constant currency. With regard to industry-wide supply chain constraints, our estimate is we were unable to ship about $20 million of orders due to lack of components. If we had been able to ship these orders, we wouldn't have had the revenue shortfall of 1.5%. We posted an adjusted EBITDA of $106.8 million, compared to prior year's first half revised results of 106.5, again, despite the incremental costs from supply chain constraints. EMEA was break-even as the adjusted EBITDA level, as the new product introductions and other operational programs started to show. We saw a nice margin expansion of 290 basis points, and this was after absorbing the incremental costs associated with the supply chain constraints. Net income improved year over year from $5 million to $59 million, with an EPS of $2.01 per share. Let's move on to slide 4. And here I want to focus on several key points in the respective regions. In North America, we continue to be a preferred supplier to the public power market. In the UK, as the market leader, we added orders to a committed backlog of 161 million British pounds, with now 18 million meters now deployed or under contract. In France, we've been awarded a contract to supply 20% of Enedis' device requirements for the next tranche of smart meters beginning being deployed in or through 2023. In Finland with Caruna, we were now running our managed services solution covering 660,000 smart meters. And in Australia, we're making progress with IntelliHub, our joint venture to address the power of choice market. All these clearly show that as the industry leader, we are ideally positioned to continue capturing the growth as the utility sector seeks products, solutions, and services to upgrade their grids and embrace new business models. Let's move on to slide 5. I want to talk in more detail about some developments in each region. Let's start with the Americas. Looking at North America, we see robust activity in the AMI market in both the investor-owned utility segment as well as public power. The primary drivers are technologies, customer needs, grid resiliency, and distributed energy resource requirements. These ingredients are shaping a dynamic marketplace and creating a grid for the future. In Japan, the technical leadership our network has enabled continues with 19 million endpoints installed, with 500,000 endpoints being deployed every month. Our system scaling capability is not just impressive, it's unparalleled in the industry. We continue to work with TEPCO to find applications which they can implement to leverage the network. And don't forget, by law, meters in Japan must be replaced every 10 years. Slide 6, a few comments on EMEA. The key markets continue to develop. In the UK, we have experienced a temporary slowdown as the transition date for the new generation of meters, SMETS 2, moved into December of 2018. As we see this, the market in the UK is far closer to the transition date than ever before. We are well positioned as our committed backlog has increased by 161 million British pounds. I mentioned the positive results in France and our minimum 20% market share. I'd like to add that if experience is any guide, our shipments could exceed the 20% level in the end. Our EMEA-focused restructuring programs are fully on track. Project Lightfoot is on track, and that will start to benefit our margins in fiscal year 2019 and fiscal year 2020, as we expect to realize $25 million in annualized savings by the end of fiscal year 2020. Finally, just a note on Project Phoenix. You will see a bit later has now reached the $20 million targeted level of annualized savings, and the project is now completed. In conclusion, in EMEA, we have a strong order intake, and our backlog is up 9.6%. Operational improvements were delivered, driving visible margin expansion. Turning to slide number 7, Asia Pacific. Based on some questions we've gotten, I thought it would be helpful to briefly walk through at a high level our transaction with PEP to acquire the Acumen metering business. Broadly, the Australian market, one of our key markets in the Asia Pacific region, had a regulatory change, power of choice, that created a retailer-led marketplace. To best serve these new retailers, we felt the need to marry our services with business and an equity financing portfolio. So together with PEP, we created a joint venture to acquire Acumen, the leading retailer in Australia. Landis & Gyr contributed our IntelliHead service platform as well as $25 million Australian dollars in cash for a 20% stake in the JV. Origin, the former parent of Acumen, awarded the retailer a material long-term contract for meter installation and servicing, and the JV has a supply agreement with Landis & Gyr. We see this as a good use of M&A to meet the market needs and align our offering. Now turning to slide 8. I'd like to spend just a moment on what we mean when we speak about supply chain constraints. Out of the thousands of components we use, about 100 of them have been impacted by rising demand in other industries. The important ones to us are capacitors, resistors, and inductors. Lead times have moved significantly in the last year, upwards of 40 weeks for some components. We've always kept safety stocks for key components, but generally not for normally available passive devices. The good news is that the list of parts we've had trouble procuring is shrinking, but this is a situation that still will remain with us and remain a challenge. Now let me just touch on one more topic. Suzanne Seitz, a talented executive with a proven track record, will join Landesinger as the new Executive Vice President of EMEA next month. In Asia Pacific, Steve Justin, a seasoned Landesinger executive, has been named as the interim head of the region, and I put the region in the hands of a solid operator who will execute the plan. The CSO role will be filled from within the company. Overall, these changes should be seen as I've taken the opportunity to streamline the management structure and reshape my team. Now let me hand it over to Jonathan to provide a more detailed view of the financial results, and I'll come back at the end to offer some summary comments and talk about the fiscal year 2018 guidance before opening the call to questions. Jonathan?
Thanks, Richard. So let's turn to slide 9 to get an overview of the H1 numbers. Overall, we believe we've made solid progress in the first half. The revenue numbers in Americas, the order intake and margin improvement in EMEA are all positive developments, particularly if you put them in the context of the supply chain constraints which we faced. So just walking through some of the key numbers on slide 9. Order intake was up 10.3% in constant currency. Main driver was EMEA, with the €87 million contract award at Atenadis and £161 million of bookings in the UK. Net revenue was down 1.9% in constant currency, and I'll unpack the details of that when I walk through the regional numbers. Reported EBITDA increased from $40.8 million to $114.9 million, and adjusted EBITDA was in line with the previous year at $106.8 million. I should just draw your attention to the footnote you see on the slide. We revised last year's first half EBITDA down by $2.3 million to reflect the adoption of a new pensions accounting standard. This does not have any effect on the net income line. So going back to the numbers, net income improved from $5.1 million in the first half of fiscal year 17 to $59.2 million in the first half of this year, and this includes the non-cash gain on the sale of IntelliHub of $15.5 million. Free cash flow, excluding M&A, was $14.1 million in H1, down from $20.6 million last year, with higher cash outs in respect of legacy warranty issues. Slide 10 is the revenue bridge for the group. America's net revenues increased $26.5 million or 5.6% in constant currency. And that is after a decline of $33 million in Japan in the first half. Revenue in EMEA decreased $38 million, with some headwinds coming from supply chain at the UK and Spain. Revenue in Asia Pacific declined by $4.5 million compared to last year, with all major markets quite subdued. I'll give a bit more detail on the revenue developments when I come to the regional slides. So slide 11, the adjusted EBITDA bridge. First thing to note, there was essentially no decline in the underlying adjusted gross profit in the first half, even though revenue fell by 1.9%. So adjusted gross profit fell by $800,000 only. And this reflects the improving margin quality of the business. If you look at the red block, you can see we incurred costs of $12.1 million directly related to the current supply chain constraints which we're experiencing. And in the blue block, you can see that our intense operational focus has reduced adjusted operating expenses by $12.6 million. This is a result of Project Phoenix in EMEA and other cost control measures around the group. So overall, adjusted EBITDA was basically flat compared to last year's first half at $106.8 million. Turning to slide 12, we show the impact of the supply chain situation. In terms of revenue, we estimate that supply chain constraints meant that we pushed out about $20 million of sales from H1. Aside from the revenue pushouts, we incurred incremental costs, partly related to premium prices for components, but also additional freight costs, for example, when air freighting assemblies or even complete meters in order to meet customer commitments. So the impact by region, if you look at the table on the right of the chart, shows that Americas incurred about $8 million of cost, which impacted their gross profit margin by 160 basis points. EMEA incurred $3.7 million of costs, that's 130 basis points on margin, and Asia Pacific, $400,000 or 60 basis points. The overall impact at group level was $12.1 million, 140 basis points of margin, and that reduced our adjusted EBITDA by 10.2%. On slide 13, you see our adjustments to EBITDA. We have continued to reduce the number and magnitude of adjustments. In fact, in H1 this year, the impact of adjustments has turned negative, meaning that we are now reporting adjusted EBITDA lower than reported EBITDA by $8.1 million. To give a bit more detail, restructuring expenses were $2.6 million. This is primarily for programs in Brazil. On the normalized warranty expenses line, the negative amount of $11.3 million reflects the fact that we had lower P&L warranty expenses in the first half than our three-year rolling average of actual costs incurred. So what that tells you is that we have not incurred any significant new warranty expenses in the first half, and also that we did not resize the warranty provision in respect of any of our legacy component issues. Turning to cash flow on slide 14. We generated free cash flow before the investment in the JV in Australia of $14.1 million. Compared to last year, we saw slightly less cash coming out of working capital at $2.3 million against $9.6 million in the first half of last year. On the other hand, we saw slightly lower capex at $16.9 million compared to $19.1 million. The main movement between the years is on the other line, and that is due to the warranty issues. So this year, additions to our warranty provisions were $40 million lower than last year. But the cash outs, mainly in respect of the legacy warranty issues, were $17 million higher than last year. Moving to slide 15, I am aware that the quality of the company's cash flow has been the subject of some discussion recently. The company has a high quality cash flow based on the underlying operational performance of the business. If you look at the table on the left of slide 15, you can see that our average annual free cash flow excluding M&A was $82.7 million in the three fiscal years, 14, 15, and 16, and $87.5 million in fiscal year 17. So on average, that's $84 million of free cash flow excluding M&A per year over the last four fiscal years. The other takeaway from this slide is that in all these 4 years, cash flow generation was skewed to the second half, with, on average, negative free cash flow generation in H1. This is because the timing of certain cash outs, including legacy warranty cash outs and other flows, have tended to be skewed to H1. And we expect a similar picture for this year, with stronger cash generation to come in H2. Turning to net debt on slide 16, since the year end, net debt increased from $40.5 million to $110.4 million. This is driven by the payment of the dividend, $68.4 million, and the contribution for the JV in Australia of $18.9 million. Overall, our leverage ratio is unchanged year over year at 0.5 times adjusted EBITDA. In terms of our capital allocation policy, we continue to keep under review how we deploy our capital. Our priority is to achieve organic growth in the business. Also, of course, we remain committed to our dividend policy of distributing at least 75% of free cash flow, excluding M&A. And we are always on the lookout for acquisition opportunities which would help us to grow. And finally, we continually keep under review the possibility of returning cash to shareholders in some way if we conclude that this is the best use of our balance sheet strength, including the possibility of a share buyback. Slide 17, for the Americas. We continue to see strong trading in the US. Again, we proved particularly strong in the public power sector, and a couple of our larger IOU projects reached full deployment speed. As expected, we saw a decline in revenues in Japan. We have other vendors coming in to supply communications modules to TEPCO. To be clear, these modules incorporate our network technology and are supplied under license from us. It was always part of our contract for the TEPCO project, and so was as expected. And this means that our Japan revenues were down $33.5 million compared to the first half of 2017, and the figure for the first half of fiscal 18 was $14.3 million of revenue from Japan. If you exclude Japan, revenues in the Americas grew by around 14% in constant currency. Gross profit performance of just under 40% reflects primarily higher component costs of $8 million, as well as a change in business mix. Expenses were well controlled, and overall, we saw our adjusted EBITDA margin at 20.5%. Slide 18, EMEA. For the EMEA region, net revenue fell by 11.6% in constant currency terms. This decrease is driven by a number of factors. Firstly, the supply chain constraints, which Richard has already mentioned. Secondly, temporary delays in the UK as the market is preparing for the transition from SMETS 1 to SMETS 2. And thirdly, the completion of a major contract in Spain, which was a headwind for us when compared to the first half of last year. However, despite the revenue decline in the first half, adjusted gross profit margins increased by 290 basis points. Recall that we saw earlier that incremental supply chain costs impacted EMEA by $3.7 million, 130 basis points of margin. This means that the underlying improvement to margins in EMEA was 420 basis points. And this margin improvement was driven by the introduction of the cost-reduced products which Richard talked about earlier. Coupled with the lower adjusted operating expenses, the region improved its adjusted EBITDA by $3.5 million to post a loss of just $400,000. So EMEA is now essentially at break-even. Slide 19 gives you an update on Project Phoenix. We've now successfully completed this project and exceeded our target of delivering $20 million of annualized savings. The left-hand chart shows the $15.8 million of the savings achieved last year. You can see on the right, we have delivered another $5 million in H1. Moving to Asia Pacific, slide 20, net revenue decreased by 6.6% in constant currency terms, a $5.9 million decline year over year. With steady sales in China, India, and Australia, these were offset by the completion of the first phase of a customer project in Southeast Asia. Adjusted operating expenses came down as some overheads were transferred to the JV in Australia as part of the IntelliHub sale, plus we undertook some other restructuring measures. And this leaves the region with a lower cost base going forward. and so the adjusted EBITDA loss was reduced by $1.9 million. I'll stop there and turn the call back to Richard for a discussion of our outlook.
Thanks for that, Jonathan. And let me wrap up by saying, in light of the first half sales performance and the continued challenges in the supply chain, we are making some slight changes to our outlook for the fiscal year 2018. We still expect the second half of the fiscal year 2018 to be stronger than the first half. So we expect the fiscal year 28 sales growth of approximately 1 to 3%. Group adjusted EBITDA to be between $217 million and $237 million U.S. dollars. Free cash flow, excluding M&A, to be between $90 million and $110 million U.S. dollars. And finally, we plan to dividend at least 75% of free cash flow for 2018, but not less than the 2017 dividend of 2.3 Swiss francs per share. Let's stop there and now open up the call for questions.
The first question comes from the line of Henry Wilson, J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I've got a few questions, if that's okay. If I can start with the Americas performance, which is certainly better than I was expecting it to be, and just trying to understand some of the moving parts there, because it seems like the Japan revenue is obviously a headwind, certainly in terms of revenues, but I'm guessing as well in margin. Could you just talk a little bit about kind of what you see as, the headwind in the second half year-on-year in Japan, also what you're seeing in terms of market dynamics there and what that might mean for profitability? We've heard from some peers sort of competing relatively aggressively in that space. And also if, if you would help us a little bit on the longer term margin, just obviously as kind of Japan rolls off. Appreciate there's quite a lot there, but that'd be helpful.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. It's Jonathan. Obviously we've disclosed today that our Japan revenue in the first half was $14.5 million. So, I think we were looking forward, I think we see that as a reasonable estimate of where we might land for the rest of the program. I think in terms of the overall margin position in Japan, I mean clearly our revenue there is very much involved with this with this one project with TEPCO, and clearly we have a fairly unique position because we are the supplier of the networking communications technology into that project and the sole supplier of the networking communications technology into that project. So we're not really exposed to the other margin pressures that other players might see.
And in terms of the core Americas, it seems like the core franchise, if you like, in the Americas has done very well this year, offsetting some of those headwinds. Can you talk about if you're seeing a change in pricing pressure and competitive pressure from some of the other big peers in that market?
Yeah, sure. I'll take that on, Andrew. Listen, I think, as we said, U.S., market is really well positioned. We talk about the public power sector where we have a nice conversion right there, and we are very competitive and will remain competitive. And we're not seeing any particular pricing pressures, in the markets.
Great. Just on the supply chain issues, we've obviously given a fair amount of detail around that. Can you, help us in terms of what you think that's going to look like in terms of the second half? I mean, is it going to be a similar level of headwind as the first half year in Euro, or is it sliding off a little bit?
Yeah, listen, I think the supply chain, there's no doubt that we've been managing through that. I mentioned the end of fiscal year 2017, some of the challenges. We did see that in the first half. As I said before, we will still expect to see some challenges remaining through 2018. Our visibility on that really goes through the second half. Beyond that, it's difficult to project. But we do see that we have, being cautious around the second half.
Okay, so we should still be building in some headwind, but maybe a little bit better than it was in the first half. Is that a reasonable base case?
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable base case, Andy. Obviously, we do see uncertainty and the challenges remain, but I think that's a reasonable assumption going forward.
Maybe if I can just ask one more, just on the free cash flow. Obviously, the detail around the historics is useful. I think adds a bit of credibility in terms of the second half. Can you just help us a little bit in terms of thinking, particularly around warranty cash outs for the second half and what you're expecting? And also, I guess, anything else that we should be thinking about which kind of supports what's obviously a meaningful step up in terms of free cash flow in the second half, please?
Sure. I think, yes, as you say, that we had quite significant warranty cash outs in the first half. And obviously, you know, we would expect those to be, you know, reduced in the second half. And just to put a number on that, I mean, the value of warranty cash outs, including the X2 issue, was $34 million in the first half. And you can see that in the numbers we published today. Now, we would expect that to be significantly lower in the second half. Obviously, you know, we're also would expect some higher margins to come through, some higher EBITDA. That's clear from the guidance that we've given today. And then we do have some of these sort of balance sheet effects that impact our cash flow and always have done historically impacted our cash flow in the first half, and those will not take place again in the second half.
That's great. Thank you. Thanks, guys.
The next question comes from the line of Katie South, Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Just a couple from me, again, on the cost from the supply chain. I just wondered, in terms of your increased guidance range for adjusted EBITDA for the full year, should we kind of see the continued supply chain impacts as being the driver of the additional downside? And then what should we think of as the driver of the additional upside, just in terms of that breadth?
Yeah, thanks, Katie. And I think one of the key points to note on our EBITDA guidance change is that we've not changed the midpoint. The midpoint of our guidance for EBITDA is unchanged. And to your point, the range has widened because of supply chain constraints and the challenges that we still see in the supply chain. So on the downside risk we see is that the supply chain constraints remain, and therefore we can't, you know, ship all of the customer orders that we have on hand, or maybe we continue to incur supply chain costs. The upside is also really related to supply chain constraints. We have orders that are visible to us, which would get us to the upper end of our revised range. And the risk that we see, or the uncertainty that we see, not the risk that we see, the uncertainty we see, is can we get all the components in hand in order to meet the upper end of the guidance range?
Great, thanks. That's helpful. And then just aside from changes in the sort of supply chain side in EMEA, what else is the particular driver of the increased performance that you're expecting in the second half?
Yeah, well, I'll go ahead and take that. It's really the lower-cost products that we've introduced. We mentioned a family of six products, four in the market today, the remaining by the end of the calendar year. Will be in the marketplace, and really those lower cost products are driving the margin expansion.
I think also in the second half, you know, we're guiding for a full year revenue growth of 1-3%, and clearly after a 1.5% revenue decline in the first half, that's an indicator that we are definitely expecting to resume a growth trajectory in the second half. And it's really the combination of that return to growth in the second half, and that will be driven by EMEA and Asia Pacific. And the margin expansion that gets us to the guidance we put out today.
Great, thank you.
The next question is from Martin Lutis, Bank Vontobel. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I have one on the Americas, where you obviously did pretty well in the first half year, specifically on the OPEX line, which came down 9%. Could you give us some flavor where this reduction came from, given that core Americas grew double digits?
Well, we just continue to keep all of our operating expenses under very tight control around the group. So we don't have a particular program in place in the Americas. It's just part of our continued focus on operational efficiency.
All right, great. And the second one would be on a question on mix. I don't think I've found anything in the stuff you provided a mix on your overall mix of hardware versus your software and services splits. Is there any change in that versus last year?
There's no significant change in the splits.
Okay. All right. Thanks. That's it for me.
The next question is from Fabian Hecky, UBS. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. First question, the IntelliHub joint venture. Can you give a bit of a color how this will impact your P&L in the second half in terms of revenues and maybe also cost takeout?
Yes. Hi, Fabian. I think, clearly, that we do expect to see an uptick in our Australia business in the second half. And clearly, in part, that's due to the products that we'll supply to the IntelliHub JV. It's not only to do with that, it's also that in general we do see some recovery in the Australian market coming through from Power of Choice. I think on the cost side, you can see that in Asia Pacific, you know, our cost base did decline in the first half. So $14.4 million of operating expenses in H1 this year compared to $17.8 million in H1 of last year. That is driven by the IntelliHub transfer and also some of the restructuring measures that we took. But obviously, we would expect to see, you know, that we didn't get the full benefit of that in the first half, so that there will be a little bit more to come in H2 in terms of the reduction to the AP operating expenses.
Okay, thank you. And then maybe just for clarification, Phoenix cost savings program of $20 million you achieved, did this already fully materialize through the whole H1?
Essentially, yes. Well, yes.
As a run rate?
Well, yes, as a run rate, yes, but obviously we will get some carryover effects into H2, but essentially, yes.
Okay, thank you. And then maybe just in general, I'm hearing more and more that you're moving to a total outsourcing business model for some products where you do not even do the kind of final assembly. How will this kind of further change or progression in your business model impact your main plant, particularly your big meter plant in Corinth, Greece, that is already still, I mean, underutilized to date?
Yeah, you're right, Fabian. We are moving towards a more outsourced model. We're very committed to the current plant, which is pretty fully loaded and a highly efficient and high quality plant. So there's no immediate plans there. And in reality, it's more the plants in the UK which are the focus of Project Lightfoot at the moment as we move to a more outsourced model.
So no short-term or mid-term impact on your kind of footprint adaption in Greece?
No.
Okay, thank you.
We have a follow-up question from Katie Self. Please go ahead.
Hi, just one more on your orders. Obviously, a nice intake this half year, but I just wondered if you could give us a sense of the mix or of the margin that you'd be expecting from that order intake and kind of what lead times and what visibility you have on that.
We don't sort of go into too much detail, Katie, on the margin mix within that order intake. I mean, obviously, the big items we've called out are Anadis and the UK, and clearly we'd expect those to have the type of margin profile associated with those markets.
There are no more questions at this time. Would you like to conclude?
Yes, let me go ahead and conclude with some closing comments. Listen, as we sign off, I want to leave you with really four key messages about our first half. Number one, order intake is up 10.3% with a strong contribution from EMEA. Two, America's resilient performance with a sales growth over 5% and adjusted EBITDA margin of 20.5% despite some headwinds. Three, EMEA break-even as margin expansion materializes, driven by operational improvements and new product introductions. And four, some challenges remain around supply chain. I want to thank you very much for joining the call. I look forward to hopefully seeing some of you on the roadshow and perhaps at the Capital Markets Day in January. Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference is now over. Thank you for choosing Chorus Call, and thank you for participating in the conference. You may now disconnect your lines. Goodbye.